The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer by the Reverend Gock and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
From the 85th Psalm we read, righteousness will go before him and will make a path for his steps. My Lord and God, if we are to succeed in finding meaning to our lives, we know that we are to be a people of integrity and love. Only then will we succeed and find the significance you have placed there for us. Help us to be consistent, knowing that there are days in which we are up and others in which we are down. But all days hold the promise of your presence and the affirmation of living the life that you have given us. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sipton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 43rd day, Monday, March 27th, 2017. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment. President Parson in the chair, Reverend Carl Gock, offered the following prayer. Create in me.
Chair from Cole, the purpose to rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator from Cole, you recognize close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
Those of the opinion that motion shall prevail say aye. Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guests. Senator from Cole, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, we have a new visitor who's not really new, who's going to become permanent, but I'm happy to say he's my constituent. To my right and to your left, Mr. President, I'd like the Senate to welcome, as we ask for a speedy recovery and offer our prayers for Marty Drool, we have asked Farmer Sheriff Greg White to step in. He said so far in 1 hour that being a Senate doorman is harder than it was to be a Cole County Sheriff, and I assured him the job will get easier. I'd like the body to make Greg feel welcome, and I assure you we will continue to wish for Marty's speedy recovery. Sheriff Greg White, Mr. President.
Would the Senate please welcome the guest from the Senator Cole? And it is great to have a new sheriff in town. Introduction of guest. Senator from the 7th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. It is my pleasure to introduce the doctor of the day, Joni Lathan from Kansas City. She practices at Truman Medical Center, and if anybody feels ill, feel free to contact her today. She'd be happy to take care of you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Let's please welcome the guest from the Senator 7 for the doctor of the day to the Senate chamber. Introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorial, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, Senator, go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection. Senate Bill 190, Senator from Barton, the Senate Committee Substitute.
I move that Senate Bill 190 be brought from the perfection calendar up before the body.
The Senator from Barton moves that Senate Bill number 190 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken up for perfection. As many as that opinion of that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, do you care to move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute and explain the bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the I actually have a floor substitute. I would like to send my floor substitute.
You need to adopt this?
I move for the adoption.
You move for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute. Okay. Now you can send your Senate Substitute forward.
President.
Mr. President, Senator, do you care to explain the substitute?
I'd be happy to, Mr. President.
Senator, you move for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
Adoption of the Senate substitute.
Okay. Now you may explain the substitute.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 190 is a culmination, a long process, acknowledging that the environment in utility regulation has changed over the last 100 years. It recognizes that there need to be some changes in how utilities are regulated if we're going to, in fact, address some of the concerns that face us today in terms of infrastructure, age, and reliability. I'm going to ask the body if they have on their desk, and they should have, a chart showing the relative cost of electricity, the changes in cost of electricity around the United States. And Missouri has always been a relatively low-cost energy state in terms of electricity rates. In fact, if you look at the first column on that three-column sheet, they will see that Missouri was 20th out of 51 states in terms of the cost of electricity in June of 2007. That's good. That was good news in 2007. This problem, Mr. President, is that if you look at that second column, which was 2016, Missouri was 37th. And if you look at the rankings in terms of the increases of electricity, the last column, you'll see that Missouri is 48th. There are only three other states in the country that have seen increases in electricity rates greater than the increase of electricity rates in Missouri. So Senate Bill 190 and Senate Substitute for Senate Bill 190 seek to address that concern that Missouri's rates are increasing faster than 47 other states. Mr. President, one of the things that contributes to that is the regulatory process and the way that it is structured for a growing environment, a growth business climate, which the utilities enjoyed for decades as more people bought appliances and we continue to increase our use of electricity. Today, though, we no longer have a growth scenario in utilities. We actually have a flat or even shrinking of electricity use, and that's good news. We're becoming more and more efficient in the use of our electricity. If you look at additional information on your desk, you may find that of the states that have not had any kind of regulatory reform, three of those are all in those the highest increase of electricity in the country. That's on that same chart that you just reviewed, the three columns. Those are the states that have not done anything to change their regulatory process. All but four states have significantly addressed it. They're acknowledging that there are infrastructure upgrades that need to be made. They're acknowledging that the environment is no longer growth, but efficiency, and so they're making those adjustments. One of the highest purposes of Senate Bill 190 is what's called PISA, Project In-Service Accounting. Currently, when an electricity company makes an investment, that investment isn't acknowledged, even though it's completed, it isn't acknowledged until it reaches the next rate case, which, of course, those rate cases are expensive, and so companies don't have those unless they have a reason to have them. But until it reaches that rate case, that investment is not acknowledged. So first of all, that means that there is no return on that investment. The company is not receiving anything back from the investment that they made. Secondly, that means that that investment is depreciating. So when it is brought in at the next rate case, whether that's a year or 2 years or 3 years down the road, that asset has depreciated significantly, and it is brought in at a lower value than it cost the company to construct it. Both of those are net losses to that energy company. In a growing environment, that was acceptable because there was enough growth in the energy realm that it would more than absorb that. But now that we're in this efficiency environment, that's no longer the case, and it significantly limits what an energy company can do in terms of extra expenses on infrastructure upgrades versus just maintenance. I've also distributed a box chart, I think it's on your desk, that summarizes everything that's in the Senate substitute for Senate Bill 190. On the left, you'll see the provisions and the section references, if you want to reference those in the bill. Just to the right of that is a brief summary of those changes, and then to the far right is a summary of the economic benefits or the cost impacts of each of those changes. Probably the most significant you'll find on page 2, the third block down, which is the plant in-service accounting. That is the part that changes that delayed response to investments that an electric company would make. That's the part that says that the company shouldn't actually be penalized because they make an investment and don't immediately call for a rate case. And so what plant in-service accounting does is it allows the electric company to make that investment, put it on stream. Let's say it's a substation, maybe $3 million substation. They put it on stream, and they immediately begin taking account of it. They immediately value it, and they immediately begin to acknowledge the depreciation in it, and they also begin to acknowledge the capital return that they would receive on it if, in fact, they had a rate case. They don't get that money, but they get to accumulate that value in an asset account, and then at the next rate case, upon review by the Public Service Commission, that value can then be brought into that rate case and into the tariff and the rates, the revenue streams, that the Public Service Commission then would approve for the upcoming years. That's the main part of the bill, frankly. There are a number of other things that are significant. There's an expansion of the definition of biomass to any waste that could be used to generate electricity. There are some enhancements to the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Program that allow corporations to actually be partially involved in that program rather than have to be opting fully in or fully out. There's an elimination of, there was a provision for research that was in the prior version of the bill. That is gone. There's no provision for research anymore. There are some economic development and retention riders that are primarily enacted when, in fact, a special rate for a large user would actually impact positively for the consumer, for the rest of the consuming, both business and private. So that if in fact, a special rate would reduce the cost to other consumers, that would be applicable for a special rate. There's also a couple of retention aspects of that we can go into more fully later. There's a change in how the fuel adjustment clause is calculated to allow certain expenses to be a part of that fuel adjustment cost. There's There's provisions in here to allow a study by the Public Service Commission on the threat of electromagnetic pulse impacts on the grid. There is some authority, significant amount of authority, that the PSC had asked for in the interim, and about tools that they would like to have that they didn't feel like they were enabled to use. We have enabled them to use a number of those tools in this bill. There's also the requirement for a five-year capital grid plan that has to be submitted by the utilities. I think that's pretty much it, Mr. President. If I might, I would like to inquire of the senator from the 13th.
Senator, has your Senate substitute been distributed?
It has been distributed, and I would move for a waiver of the reading.
The waiver will be granted. The senator from Barton has inquired. The senator from the 13th. Senator, do you yield?
I do.
Okay. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator. I know you have actively engaged in this process for some time. When we were in the House, we worked together on energy issues. We're able to continue working together on some of these. And I was just curious as if you had any comments or any thoughts that you wanted to bring to the table to assist our colleagues in knowing where they are on Senate Bill 190.
I did have a few questions for you, Senator.
Bet.
I was curious as to how long you've been working on this particular piece of legislation and how it differs from legislation you've worked on over the years in the same area.
Sure. That's a great question, Senator. And well, this actually is one of three potential pieces of legislation that came out of the interim study on grid modernization this last interim. We worked on it for a long time, but because of some difficulty last year on Senate Bill 1028, and I like 1028. I like that that type of a rate structure. I think it's fundamentally very sound in terms of protecting consumers. But we weren't able to pass that, and there were concerns that we weren't able to satisfy, and so there were three plans that came out of that interim committee. This was one of them. This is probably the least significant in the amount of change that it makes to the regulatory environment, and that's how it was developed. There was lots and lots of testimony, hours of testimony from energy experts from across the country, public service commissioners from Florida, folks from associations, energy associations, customer. Interested parties. I mean, we had testimony across the board, and this was one of those three potentials in terms of what might come out of that committee. One was simply an authorization, I think, of PSC to do considerably more than they do now. One was formula rate making, similar to 1028 that we had on the floor last year, and the other was the PISA, the plant in-service accounting, primarily with some of these other aspects included, including some of the release of the Public Service Commission to some of the things that they could do to help with that infrastructure upgrading.
So, Senator, you know that part of the reason I like this bill is because I felt it created jobs. Is that true? Is this going to create jobs for Missourians? And if it is, you know, how many is it going to produce, and are they going to be good-paying jobs?
You know,
that's what's important to me.
Absolutely, and I think that's probably one of the reasons that you like the bill, Senator, is because that when we consider the impact that this is going to have on the workload, let's just take one example. Let's take Ameren UE, which. Ameren says that with this structural regulatory environment, they will be able to spend approximately $200 million a year more on infrastructure upgrades than they're spending now. it would allow that to become profitable and to compete with other projects where now those projects can't compete within the Ameren scope. $200 million will amount over 5 years to $1 billion of additional investment, almost all of which will be engaging qualified, technically trained individuals working in that industry, and that's a highly paid industry. And contractors that they'll have to have because they'll need outside contractors, not
contractor just Senator. I had issues with this bill before because of some contractor language.
This is what, Senator?
If you recall last year, I had problems with this because of some contractor language.
Yes.
And has that been addressed?
The same language is in here relative to that section. That came out of this body, or that was debated in this body and was compromised to last year.
Where it is in the bill?
I can tell you in just a minute, Senator.
Okay.
It's near the end of the bill. Let me open my copy here. Should be one of the last two pages of the bill. On page 46, section 393.1650, I think, is where that language occurs. Might be on the top of page 47, Senator.
There it is. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. One of my colleagues inquired about me this morning about that, and I wanted to make sure that the language was still good. The other thing I wanted to know, for businesses and families on fixed income, in my district and districts across the state, an unexpected rate spike can be devastating, especially for the residents.
Sure.
Because a lot of them are seniors and a lot of them are on the lower income brackets. How will this affect them? How did you address that in here? Because I know you were inquired about that in committee on this bill.
Right.
I just want to make sure that a little lady that lives down the street from me, that her electric bill isn't going to skyrocket.
You bet.
I mean, according to everything I've read on this and everything I have, it says it's going to stabilize the industry.
That's right.
So tell me how it's going to do that.
Well, first of all, let me give you just a couple of kind of background issues. One is, let me go back to that economic development rider. That provision alone, if in fact we see the kinds of expansions, which once again will have major impact on jobs, there's a corporation in southeast Missouri that would love to expand and get back into some things that they've had to contract internationally because of price competition and very energy-intensive company, and they would see a significant expansion if, in fact, they could get that special rate on electricity. And that special rate would only be approved if it, in fact, reduced everyone else, had a positive impact on everyone else's rates. So there is one example of an opportunity in here to help push pressure prices down. There are also some amendments I know that are likely to be offered that will actually put some caps on what rate how much rate increases can happen, either as a result of the PISA part of this, the extra investments, or just overall rate increases, period. Those will help to stabilize rates. What we've seen in the other states that have done this is that that's been one of the things that has been praised the highest, is that it has tended to stabilize rates and make them much more predictable. Still rate increases largely across the board. I don't know if you looked at that chart that I referenced earlier with all 50 states on it. That shows the way that rates have changed since 2007. You'll see some states, Senator, that have actually seen reduced rates by as much as 20%. Texas has seen a reduction of 20% in their rates since 2007. Missouri has seen an increase of 46% since 2007. Now, Texas is—they're a bit of a horse of a different color. They have a competitive electricity environment there, and it's been privatized and largely deregulated, so that has an impact. Louisiana has seen a 15% reduction. They have remodeled their regulatory structure. Nevada, they've diminished by 12% the cost of electricity since 2007. That's a remodeled regulatory structure. Florida is one.
Wait a minute, Senator, say that again about Nevada.
They have another one that has remodeled their regulatory structure. They've made changes. We're
and
one of only four.
They've reduced their rates by 12%.
Reduced their rates by 12%.
I thought you said 20. I'm like, I'm looking at the chart, and it's saying 12.5. No.
12.6, right?
Right, yeah.
Right. I was looking for Florida. Florida is one that has significant. Here they are. Florida is number 9th. They've reduced their rates by 2.8%. Illinois, of course, our neighbor. And once again, Illinois has deregulated largely the industry in Illinois. They're almost unique in how they've done it. I'm looking for them on here. I know they've recently, here they are. They've increased rates by 5.7% since 2007. We've increased rates by 46.7%. So the whole idea of the restructure, and one of the things that is good about it is that if essentially, for every dollar that's invested on this on these infrastructure upgrades, the customers will see a benefit of somewhere between around $2.50 to maybe as much as $3.50. Some of that's depending on whether you discount or don't discount those numbers, because they're spread over a period of time. Because you don't get all of the benefit the first year after you begin upgrades. The benefit accrues because you're getting benefits year after year after year. So largely, this outside of, I guess, government mandates. This doesn't interrupt government mandates. If we get mandates from Washington D.C. that require certain things to be done with plants, that's going to boost rates up. That's going to raise rates.
Thank you.
Unforeseen circumstances that force majeure type items that come in, then that's going to see upward pressure on rates. But largely, the states that have significantly remodeled their regulatory environment have seen just the opposite. The pressure is downward on the rates for a number of reasons. And even though they're paying more, I mean, they're actually, you know, we're spending money. We're talking about $200 million a year that company would be spending that they aren't spending now for those infrastructure upgrades. What we're seeing is the benefits that come back from those expenditures justify the expenses. And that's the way any business decision should be made anyway, as you know, Senator. If you're going to decide whether you're going to invest in a business, you want to know how long it takes you to get your money back. You don't just invest because you like spending money.
Right.
You invest because there's a return on that money. That's what we've seen in the other states that have modified their regulatory environment, is that they do get that return. The estimated return from modeling here is about $2.40 to maybe as much as $3.50 return to the customer for every dollar that's expended.
So, Senator, this is your inquiry, but I'd like to ask you to do me a favor here, if you don't mind. Let's go back in history when you and I served in the House, all right?
Yes.
And you were chairman of the Utilities.
Yes, ma'am.
Committee, and I was on your committee.
Yes.
And we had some pretty contentious legislation around some of these issues, right?
We did.
And I can remember you saying, you know what, all the parties get together, come back to us when you have a solution, and then we're going to talk. Because it got really, really nasty, if you recall. Okay? So last year, everybody threw all these things at you saying, well, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. So you have provided a great chart here. And I would like to ask you some questions about this chart and you to walk me through it, not for the benefit of the people that have the chart in front of them, but for the benefit of the folks that might be listening. Because
sure.
I don't want people to assume that this was introduced late, or we haven't worked on this before. This is a project that's been going on a long time.
It has, Senator.
You know, and we have the right to agree to disagree, but it's also, to me, an issue of fairness of what you've done to get the bill to this point. So Last year it was timing. Talk to me about the timing from last year. What was the problem, and how did you remedy that?
From last year?
Yes.
Well, I think one of the criticisms...
Or you can go back as far as you'd like, Senator.
Let's just go back to last year, Senator. I think one of the criticisms that I heard the most often from the way the legislation was passed out last year, and it was because the senator from Clay was working very hard to arrive at exactly the consensus that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was having meeting after meeting after meeting with parties that are affected by this one way or the other, and trying to develop, and I don't remember how many versions of Senate Bill 1028 we actually had. I'm sure he could tell us if he was in here. But it was a large number of versions that came out again and again. But the problem was when we finally brought it to the floor, because we finally felt like we had gone as far as we could go in terms of resolving all these questions, it was later in the session than most of our colleagues wanted. And all of a sudden, it was a surprise. It was, I think, in excess of 100 pages. And this was this huge bill, complicated issue, and there was a lot of sense that, wait a minute, this is too late, too much, too late. We want to see it earlier. And that's one of the reasons that the pro tem, President pro tem of the Senate, established this interim committee, because he didn't want to see that same thing happen again. He wanted this process to begin right away. This is one of the products of that process. We tried to get this, as much of it as we could, before people as early as possible in terms of engaging everyone that was interested in the Senate. And one of the reasons for this chart is to say, let's all know exactly what's in this bill. Let's all ask the questions, resolve any issues that need to be resolved, amend things that if they need to be amended, and we can still preserve that infrastructure upgrade, and hopefully get something done for the people of Missouri.
So last year, the bill wasn't filed in what folks felt as a timely fashion because it was a work in progress,
right,
that you all just wanted to make sure that every T was crossed and every I dotted and every issue was in there that people wanted.
Yes.
So then it got caught up in the idea that here we are March or April and you're bringing us this 100-page bill. And I understand that for the folks that don't serve on the committee, they get the substitute whenever. They might get it the morning that we bring it up on the floor.
Yes.
And that's a lot to swallow. So it was filed early this year, and then it became a work in progress.
Right.
So, and I can see it's not 100 pages this time either, Senator.
Yeah,
it's about,
right. I wish it was half the size it is, Senator, but I've gone through it, and I'm not sure that there's anything in there that we can actually pull out other than just entire sections, and most of those sections have a real purpose. So, but it is, yeah, it is still a fairly complicated piece of legislation, and it's something that's very important, but it's not always easy for everyone to get their arms around if they haven't actually worked on the bill like as you have on the committee.
Well, in last year, I think the second issue was, one of the other issues was, how would the money be spent, and is there a plan?
Right. There is, this does require a 5-year plan on the infrastructure upgrade. It also has a 10-year, I think this has a sunset as well. Just a minute, Senator. I'm trying to remember if we do sunset this. Maybe we don't, because it's difficult to in this kind of a legislative environment. No, I'm thinking of another energy bill. But it requires a 5-year schedule of investment on infrastructure upgrades. So there is that. The PSC would have a chance to see that and review it and hold them accountable to it, that this is what you said you were going to
do. Well, and how does that, excuse me, how does that process work with the PSC? Walk me through that.
Well, there's a lot of things that just haven't changed with how it works with the PSC. The PSC, I mean, virtually every one of these changes has to be implemented in a rate case. Even the PISA, which is probably the biggest part of this, those costs are not recovered. They're accumulated for the purpose of recovery, but they're not recovered until you have a rate case so that the Public Service Commission can have another shot at how all that's done. Public Service Commission decides based on all of that information that's brought in, exactly what they decide now. They look at the expenditures that you have made. They look at the revenues that you have accumulated. over that period. They look at the cost of capital that you have, the cost of borrowing. They look at cost of maintaining and servicing the grid. I mean, all of those things come into that rate case, and then they determine, after they look at all that, and if in fact they, for example, believe that your risk has been reduced, maybe the utility's risk has been reduced because of PISA, because they're going to be recovering more of the costs that they're expending, that they're currently losing in this environment. The new environment says you get to recover those. Public Service Commission can take all that into account when they set the rates that then that company can have going forward. That's going to affect what they establish as the ROE. It's going to affect everything that they do, and they're going to allow or disallow expenditures just like they do now. So that rate case process really doesn't change. The only thing that changes is that the utilities can now bring into that rate case real costs and real investment numbers that they previously could not bring in. They were not allowed to bring those into those rate cases. So these are real dollars. They've really been spent. They've really been invested. Depreciation has really occurred. But without this legislation, the PISA part of it, those cannot be brought into a rate case. And so they just disappear. And the utility has to figure out some other way to pay the bills because they don't get those returns on those investments.
Oh, and Senator, at any time, this is your inquiry. You can stop me whenever you want.
I'm fine, Senator.
Oftentimes we forget whose inquiry it is, and I would just want to keep us on track here.
Well, this is one of the reasons I inquired of you, Senator, was to see what questions you have, because I know you know.
Well, I always have a lot of questions because I am kind of like fly by the seat of my pants last minute, and here we are. But this chart is very helpful, but I have two of them, and one has more information than the other, so I'm assuming that the latest one is addressed to the substitute. But talk to me a little bit, what is ROE? What is that?
The latest one should have the section numbers.
The latest one has the section. Well, I can throw this away then.
That's right. The other one you can toss.
All right. Well, my question that I just asked you, I don't know if that even is in here. What is ROE, return on investment? Or?
Well, it's the same as return on
equity,
investment.
Okay.
It's the same as ROI. It's a return that a company is authorized to make. Because this is a regulated industry, let me back up a little bit, Senator, because obviously in the private sector, when you brought a proposal into your management, you would give them an ROI or an ROE, a return that they could expect. And you would show them all the numbers, and you would say, with the economic analysis says that if you invest this money, this is the return that you will get on the money you invest. That's where, for a utility, that is a return on the capital that they have invested in that company. So whenever they invest more capital, then they get return on that capital. And that rate is determined by the Public Service Commission. The utility doesn't determine it. They come into that rate case. They ask for something, you know, and then the customers and OPC and others that are involved in a rate case, they come in and they argue whether or not they think that's a reasonable ROE, whether that's a rate of return that is should be expected or not. And the Public Service Commission looks at all these other factors, and they then ultimately make the decision on what that number should be. Once they've determined that number, they use that then to determine the rate that they're going to allow the utilities to have. We may have a senator who needs to make an introduction. Senator,
Is there a three-senator standing, Senator? Oh, well, that guy's got a big hammer. He can gavel us any time.
Seeking unanimous consent, the chair has a guest that he would like to introduce. Seeing no objection, on behalf of the senator from Cole, it is a great honor for me to welcome Dr. John Yates, who is here with us as the guest speaker for the Show Me Your Glory, Lord prayer event, which is being held today at noon in the Rotunda. Dr. Yates is currently the executive director of the 2000 Church Missouri Baptist Convention, which headquarters here in downtown Jefferson City. Prior to coming to Missouri, Dr. Yates served as recording secretary for the Southern Baptist Convention and was the director of communications and public policy for the Louisiana Baptist Convention. Dr. Yates has also served 20 years as a pastor of churches in Texas and Kansas and has written two books as well as being a contributing author on several others. Dr. Yates has received numerous degrees, including his Doctor of Ministry from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City. He and his wife Sharon have 3 sons and 9 grandchildren. They currently reside in Lowman, Missouri. I ask that you join me and the Senator from Cole in making these fine guests feel welcome today in the Missouri Senate. Senators, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
So, Senator, right before you started explaining Roe to me, the junior senator from St. Charles escaped, and I whispered to him, oh, don't leave. It's our riveting conversation. It's about to get exciting. Because I'd like to talk to you about the biomass investment section.
Sure.
And how it's different this time than it was in 2016, or if it was even in there in 2016.
Senator. I think in the final version it was in 1028. But the only change, there was concerns brought to us that it was too narrowly described. And so what we've added is basically anything that's burned, any waste that's burned to generate electricity would qualify in that biomass section. There are others, entities through the state that are developing process to burn like landfill waste.
Uh-huh.
And to use that to generate electricity. And they felt like that the biomass description didn't qualify them because it's a plant description. And so it's been expanded so that if somebody's actually using, consuming waste to generate electricity, that would come into that same
section. How are they going to do that?
I'm not sure just exactly. I'm guessing incineration, that they just use incineration and just generate steam and use it that way. But I really don't know the details of the process. I just know that there was a concern that the biomass description wouldn't include them, and they were essentially doing the same kind of thing. And that certainly if we can consume that otherwise landfill-purposed material and generate electricity from it, that should be a good thing.
Yeah, it should. So can you talk to me a little bit about enhancements to MEIA? MEIA?
Yes. That's the Missouri...
Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act.
Energy Efficiency Investment Act.
It's a long title, Senator.
I can. Let me get to that section so that I can be sure I'm accurately answering your question, Senator.
That's the first time you have to pick up the bill on this, Senator. You know this stuff pretty much inside and out, don't you?
I do my best. It's 393-1075. And
page 16. I opened up the bill and it just happened to fall right onto that.
16. I'm trying to remember exactly what we did change there, Senator. We changed some of that. That's where we changed the demand-side programs. Demand-side programs are basically programs that incentivize the purchaser of electricity to maybe put in insulated windows or high-efficiency appliances or something of that nature, and it provides incentives for them. Prior to this language, a company had to either opt fully in or opt fully out of that. But what we discovered was there were companies that had multiple accounts, multiple energy purchasing accounts, and they had some of those accounts that they didn't really want to opt in on because they were already doing their own thing and they'd already made their investments and they'd already justified them. But they had some other accounts that really could have benefited from this program. And so what we've allowed here is that a company under those circumstances and in the situations described in the bill, they could actually opt in portions those accounts as accounts rather than as a corporate structure. And that should help, I think, expand the application of that. bring new efficiencies. But once again, we're right back to the whole problem that we're trying to address here, is we're not growing electricity use. We're efficient. Becoming more efficient,
sure.
So we're actually shrinking it, which is why the current regulatory environment is a problem.
Well, and everybody tries to do that. I mean, I have a race with my utility company when I'm up here
sure.
to see how low I can get my bill
absolutely.
While I'm in session, because
right.
the only other person there is my daughter.
Yeah. We
you
had
know,
this,
and
this
you know how it is when you have single children living at home. That's just a parking place.
Right.
They're
right.
in, they're out, so they shouldn't be generating any electricity.
That's right. We went the whole weekend. I don't think we have a ground source heat pump. I don't think it kicked on a single time because we just used the fireplace because it wasn't cold enough that you
sure.
really needed. We were able to get plenty of warmth out of the fireplace. I don't think the unit kicked on a single time through the several days of spring break.
Well, that's good. That's really good. We didn't have it on. We actually used the attic fan last week.
Yeah.
And that was nice to be able to turn on the attic
absolutely.
Fan and use that. You know, I was looking at this other chart I have, and it is germane to this conversation, because in 2016, that bill, there was no cost-benefit analysis provided. Was there one on this bill? I mean, according to the information I have, that a consultant was
That's a good
hired.
Question, Senator. I know we've had... I mean, that's the basis of the return on investment, is
right.
the cost-benefit analysis. And I know I've actually seen the modeling. I don't have a copy of the model, but I've seen the modeling that generated that. So there has been cost-benefit analysis. It has been done by the utilities themselves. I know KCP&L has a model, Empire has a model, Ameren has a model. And the Public Service Commission has a model. I think the numbers that we've used in the bill came from the Public Service Commission's model.
Okay.
And it was largely consistent with the utilities as well.
So in one of the complaints from the 2016 legislation was that they needed independent assessment of Missouri's energy policies. So that interim committee, did they look at that? Did we do any independent studies that addressed that issue and considered other states' regulatory models and things like that?
Start that question again, Senator. I missed the first part.
Well, one of the problems with the 2016 legislation was that there was no independent assessment of Missouri's energy policies. So I
okay.
guess my question is, has there been any assessments of our policies that are of an independent nature, that they weren't done by the industry or anybody that had a dog in the fight, so to speak?
Right, right. Well, other than the Public Service Commission.
Right.
That's the only one I know of that I would consider an independent analysis would be the Public Service Commission's analysis. I don't know if anyone contracted anything out.
Well, and I guess your interim committee, that would be a study. Because it was independent of the legislation, it was made
up. I guess you could say that. Right.
Yeah, folks
right.
that were on that committee were
right.
from
there was the testimony.
Both sides of the issue.
Right, and we did have volumes of testimony that was recorded in the final report. So that I guess you could say that is to some degree a study. It wasn't necessarily a mathematical model.
Right, and you know what? This legislation, it just brought something to my mind. This is a classic example of. You know, everybody always thinks outside this building that it's the D's against the R's, and it's not, because this bill has folks that fall on both sides of this issue from both sides of the aisle.
Right. Yeah, energy really has always been pretty much a nonpartisan issue, and that's always good.
I think it is, and I think it's a good thing that we've listened, because I think we've made strides, and maybe not great strides or not strides that folks are completely happy with, to change things.
Right.
And to understand that there's other ways to generate electricity, and there's other ways to get where we need to be.
And frankly, Senator, if I can just kind of build on that comment just briefly, is that that's one of the advantages of upgrading the grid, is because we are seeing a lot of these distributed generation sources now, whether you're talking wind or solar or biomass or or anything in that nature. We're seeing more and more of that, and the regulatory structure that was established in 100 years ago really didn't anticipate that, nor did the grid that's roughly 90 years old. It didn't anticipate that. I mean, there was a one-way flow. You know, you generated electricity at some coal plant or some nuclear plant or some dam somewhere on a river, and you sent that electricity to the homeowners and the businesses. Today, you're seeing businesses generate electricity. You're seeing homeowners generate electricity. You're seeing wind farms generate electricity. So you're seeing this distributed generation, and you're seeing what you can term as two-directional flow of electricity. One of the reasons for upgrades is that the old meters, for example, don't really accommodate that two-way flow of electricity. So you need the new meters to accommodate that accurately. KCP&L has already done a lot of that work. It's interesting. I think they have virtually replaced all their meters. Not absolutely all their meters. There's some of their meters that are still in place that are not the two-way, but virtually all of their meters have been changed to the two-way power flow type meter. And they've seen, I think, well, in fact, one of the things that you'll see in this bill, if you read it, is we've been very careful not to mandate on the consumers what they have to do. And so when we, for example, a company wants to upgrade meters, if a consumer doesn't want that upgraded meter, if they want an old style, maybe an analog meter, because they don't trust this electronic stuff.
Right.
We've allowed them to do that.
So that's the section on I've seen that in here. I've seen it actually, the smart metering section. Is that what you're talking about? I was distracted from our conversation for a moment. And I'm looking at your summary.
Yeah, I think that's right. Where did I'm not sure if we boxed it in, but it's in the bill. I've got it.
There it is. It's on page 4 of your summary at the bottom, right?
Let me get there, Senator. And
smart meters are there and blocking devices.
Okay, then I'm looking at a different version because mine doesn't have any new language on page 4.
Looking at the bill? I'm looking at the...
Look at the summary?
I'm looking at your summary.
Oh, okay. All right. That's probably right, Senator. Page 4 of the summary.
See it there at the bottom?
Yes. Right. No, I'm sorry. The blocking devices, that...
No, right above it is the smart metering language.
You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, right above blocking devices. The blocking devices, by the way, was an initial version, and that now has become a study. That was relative to the threat of electromagnetic pulse impact on the grid, and that we really don't know how serious a threat that is. And so that now is in here as the PSC needs to open a docket. They're going to have to open a docket, and they're going to have to study that issue and come up with some kind of report to the legislature about just what the threat is and whether there are ways that we should be addressing it.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the certificate of convenience and necessity exemption?
Yes. Let me get to my notes on that because that was a little confusing to explain. But, second. What page are you looking at, Senator?
I'm on page 3 of your summary. Third paragraph down.
Oh, that's right. Right. Yeah, that has to do with those small generating. That's a 1 megawatt or less. That would be something like a Walmart putting a system on top of their roof or...
Solar panels?
Yeah, like a solar panel or Monsanto doing something like similar. What that does is it says that typically in order for a company to do something like that, they'd have to go through a verification process with the Public Service Commission and establish a certificate of need and a number of things that could be costly and time-consuming. What this basically does is exempt anything below that 1 megawatt and says you don't have to go through that process. You can go ahead and do it and then just bring it in at the next rate case.
So would I be correct in assuming that just a residential customer that wanted to do that,
well, actually,
this has nothing to do with
this them? This is something that the utility would do for that local, for that small user. Right.
Right.
So they would actually build it. So they want to recover their cost on it. But they wouldn't necessarily do it if they had to go through this long process with the Public Service Commission before they could build it. Says if it's this small, you can do it and then just bring it in and the Public
next
Service
time.
Commission can review it at the next rate case and see if they agree that it was prudent.
Was there any pushback on that?
I haven't received any so
far.
Great. Maybe because there just haven't any questions about it. I don't know.
Okay. Okay. What's this about the property tax and O&M expense deferral?
That's part of the PISA that essentially says that those things can be accumulated in an asset account, that they're going to have to be paid and expended, but they can be accumulated in an asset account and then can be brought in at the next rate case and actually can be introduced at the rate case where today they wouldn't be allowed in the
rate
case.
Okay. And then further down on that page is the plant in-service accounting.
Right. That's the overall plant in-service that says all of those things. The previous question was basically just the process by which that is done. And it also basically is a rider that says this can be brought in separately from the other information in the rate case. So it's... it allows that to be handled on its own and not just disappear because it doesn't come in, because it happens after the last rate case was already done. I don't know if that makes sense or not, Senator. I may have confused.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It does. Well, Senator, I don't think I have any more questions for you. Do you have any more for me?
I appreciated you walking through this, Senator, because I had intended to spend a little more time on this, but I know, as we can see, a lot of our colleagues feel like they get enough pretty quickly and leave, and so I didn't want to take a lot of time. But I think going through it with a Q&A is a whole lot more interesting than me just trying to walk through and talk about the
Well, and sometimes so. When you talk about it, it sinks in a little better. Instead of sitting here reading through pages and pages and pages while other people are talking around you. It just makes it a little more clear. I know it does for me. I support regulatory reform, and I want energy costs to be more stable. And, you know, if Senate Bill 190 will do that, I'm all for it. And I know you've worked hard on this, and I wish you luck. But if you have no more questions of me, I have no more of you.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you taking my inquiry. Mr. President.
Senator from Barton.
President, I have an amendment.
Send your amendment forward. Has it been distributed?
It has not, and I need a copy of that. It has not been distributed. I will not close until it has been distributed. I would ask for a waiver of the reading.
The reading of the amendment will be waived.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Do you care to explain your amendment, Senator?
I would be happy to, Mr. President. This is another of the, the things that have been discussed that have been concerns over the legislation, and we're trying to address as many of those as possible. This section applies to just to the electric corporations that have opted into the PISA. The plant and service accounting, that is an opt-in program. I didn't explain that earlier, but it's something that a company has to opt into. And the reason for that is because there are certain things that the Public Service Commission cannot do, but a company can voluntarily do. So I think this addresses 393 1650, right. This address is 393-1650, and it provides limits to what rate increase, how much rate increase can actually happen under while they're in a PISA. And so if a company opts into this, then they cannot grow their rates at any more than 3% average over a three-year period. I'm trying to make sure I explain this exactly right. And this explains how the average base rates would be calculated. And it also describes what the structure of the company would be. And it freezes rates starting whenever the company implements the PISA. It freezes rates for 3 years with no increase, and then allows that increase to be anticipated at 3% a year, which would mean they could have a 9% increase at the end of those 3 years. And that is basically it. Mr. President, could I inquire the senator from Cape Girardeau?
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you yield to an inquiry from the senator from Barton?
I do. Thanks, Senator. And I know you've been involved in this all along. I think one of the sections we removed entirely because you had some concerns, and
yes.
I certainly understand those concerns after I reviewed that section.
And I appreciate
again.
You working with me on that.
Absolutely.
As well.
No, I was a little nervous about that section from the beginning, but your pushback convinced me. It's not just me.
That doesn't
really make sense. So
I thought that really made the bill a lot better by doing that. So I appreciate all the work you put into it.
Right, and I know, and we've even talked some about this process, the three-year delay and some other things, and I don't think I've gotten completely to the place you would like to be here.
But we're getting closer.
We are getting closer.
Not I didn't there yet, necessarily, but we are getting closer.
Yeah, I didn't want to necessarily lose the floor until you'd had an opportunity to get up and maybe talk about what you think of this amendment and where you think we should go from here.
Well, thank you for your inquiry. You know, you have a, I believe in your amendment, a 3% cap, I believe. Is that correct,
Senator? That's right.
Yeah. And what happens if they exceed that 3% cap?
I don't know that we have a penalty in there. I guess
I would like to see one, personally.
Okay.
I like to see a carrot and a stick. I think the carrot is the 3% cap. But I'd kind of like to see a stick that what happens if they go over that 3% cap. And so actually I have a substitute amendment to your amendment that actually puts that stick in there to make sure that won't happen. And if they go over 3.75%, then that would institute a penalty for them.
That's on an annual basis?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then if that happens, then they can no longer use the PISA you're talking about or the trackers. So it kind of makes it a pass-fail performance amendment.
Okay. Well, I don't think I have any problem with that, Senator. I mean, I personally think that a company that opts into this plan genuinely anticipates that they can operate within it.
Right.
But my guess is if there was a penalty there, they absolutely would operate within it.
Right, yeah.
What is the penalty that you are imposing?
Well, they could no longer use the program if the utility fails.
So they would have to opt completely out of the program. They would
that's
lose
right.
the program
And then
entirely.
They'd have to come to us again, which I don't think they would like to do since we've been working on this for, 4 years now?
That's right.
I doubt they want to come back anytime right. soon. And so if they exceeded that 3.75%, they would be automatically prohibited from using the program. And if they wanted to opt in again or change something, they'd have to come see us again, which...
Pretty severe penalty.
Probably wouldn't be in their best interest to start this process over again, because we see how many years it took us to get where we are today.
Well, I can tell you, if I was that company and... The threat of going over was going to kick me out of the program, I'd make sure I didn't go over.
Exactly. I think it's a good incentive to, you know, really watch what they're doing and keep it, you know, to the 3%, but certainly if they go over, I mean, things fluctuate. You know, they don't have complete control over everything, and I understand that. That's why I didn't say, well, if you go over 3%, because that's the cap, then you get penalized. I don't think that would be fair, so I tried to pick out a reasonable cap that if you exceeded, that was far larger number than you were really, you know, authorized to you. I mean, you know, it's almost a third larger when you think of it, just short of a third larger. So I think I was very lenient in doing that.
Yeah, that's not all, at all unreasonable. All right, well, I will sit down, Senator, if you want to offer your amendment.
Okay.
And then we can, if we need to talk further about your amendment, we can do that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any of the Senator desire to be heard?
President.
Senator from Cape Girardeau,
Amendment for the amendment. I will send it forward.
Send it forward.
It has not been distributed, and I will not close until it has been distributed.
Do you move for its adoption, Senator?
I move for its adoption.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. Would you like to proceed with your explanation?
As I was mentioning to the Senator from Barton, I kind of want to look at some sort of incentive to stay at that 3% cap, knowing that things get out of hand and you don't have complete control over everything, and you might go over it, but if you exceed it by 3.75%, then according to my substitute amendment, they'd no longer be able to use the PISA, you know, the project and service accounting or the trackers. And so it kind of makes it a pass-fail type of situation. And I think it's strong incentive to make sure they stay at the cap that it's authorized in the Senator from Barton's amendment. And so if they did go to 3.75%, then they would be kicked out of the program. They couldn't use it anymore, and they'd have to come back to us again to try to have it corrected and maybe put back into a program or modernize it. And as we can see, having worked on this for the last 4 years, it's a slow process and probably a situation they would try to avoid at almost any cost.
The Senator from Cape has moved for the adoption of Senate Substitute Amendment 1 for Senate Amendment 1 for Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 190. Does any other senator desire to be heard?
President, I have the floor. I'd like to call now on the Senator from Clay. That is
true. Senator from Clay, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from Cape Girardeau?
I do, Mr. President.
Please proceed.
And, Senator, I think my amendment, which ends in 0.6S, is being distributed. Have you had a chance to look at that or hear my discussion on what it does?
Yeah, it has just been handed to me here. This is Senate Substitute Amendment. And I think, let's see here, I think you're saying if it goes over 3.75,
right,
that they are then kicked out of the PISA provisions?
Right. I felt it was important to have some sort of, because right now with the 3% cap, there's really not a penalty if they go over it. You know, it's kind of, oh, well, I went over it, I'll have to do better next time. But this puts a 3.75% ceiling on that, so if they do exceed it by that much, then they can no longer use the plant and service accounting or the trackers. And
three senators standing. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before we get too far involved, I would ask for unanimous consent to introduce a special guest.
Hearing no objection, please proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two special guests. One, the St. Charles County Recorder of Deeds, Barb Hall, to my left and your right, and also Mary Dempsey, the Assistant Recorder of Deeds. And by the way, Mary Dempsey is the sister of the former senator from the 23rd District, who I believe is, oh, nope, he's not looking at me down from the gallery. So I would just ask that the body make them feel welcome. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. Would the Senate please make the guests of the senator from the 23rd welcome in the Missouri Senate today? Senator from Andrew, for what reason do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I pursuant to Rule 91, I ask to be recused from voting on any and all votes on Senate Bill 190.
The senator from Andrew has moved to recuse himself under Rule 91. Hearing no objection, your request will be granted, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Senator from the 27th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, Senator, again, if they go over the 3.75% ceiling, if the utility fails and exceeds that cap, they can no longer use the program. So I would think that would be a great incentive to really scrutinize what they're doing and watch those caps, because if they exceed the 3% and get up to 3.75%, then it's like playing Candyland, and they have to go all the way back to the start, and I don't think they'd want to do that.
Yeah, I think that sets up a pretty good framework. I'm looking on page 3, line 5, so section 6, so the last section on page 3. It says the regulatory liability provided for in subsection 3 of this section shall be $12 million for an electrical corporation with more than 1 million retail customers, and $3 million for an electrical corporation with more than 200,000 but not more than 1 million retail customers. So that's basically setting up a financial penalty as well.
Exactly, right? And that was in the amendment that the senator from Barton had proposed as far as the financial part of it.
So your amendment would kick them out of their ability to participate in the PISA provisions, and they would still be subject to a fine.
That is correct. They'd have both things there. And, you know, again, like I said, I think that's great incentive, because not only do they have to go back to us and out of the program, now they have to pay money to come back to us, which I don't think would be in their best interest.
Yeah, I like that as far as an accountability measure there. I do think I would like to bump those numbers up a little bit, though. 12 million and 3 million. I think doubling those numbers would probably provide more financial incentive for them
So you're thinking what, about 24?
Well, I'd go 25 just to make
25
it.
25 million?
Just nice. It has a nice sound to it.
Well,
25.
As you know, Senator...
But then six for the other, for the small
I've
one.
Been involved in the stock market since high school, and one of the publications that I use a lot called Value Line, and I'm looking at the page that just came out March 17th on Ameren. And if you have an amendment you're going to offer to that, and it's $25 million, according to what I'm looking at here, that'd be about 10%. Of their profits.
Yeah, I think from the information that I've received, a 0.75. We're trying to keep them under 3, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the goal of the whole goal of the policy is to keep them under a 3% increase.
Yes.
And then you're saying if they exceed, they have to pay a fine, but if they exceed too much, they're kicked out altogether. I want to make sure that there's not a window in there where they can exceed and it's still financially beneficial for them to do so and remain within the program. So I think that, from what I asked for and what I was given in those numbers, a 0.75 increase on the rate base is about $22.5 million.
Okay.
Of gross revenue. That's not counting what they would have to then spend and net out. But $22.5 million is the gross amount that they would receive from a 0.75% rate increase. So I think if you make the fine $25 million, you wipe out any incentive for them to exceed the 3%.
Well, I don't have a problem with that, Senator. In fact, if I was Ameren, I'd probably put three of my best accountants on this between my amendment and your amendment to make sure that never happened. To have to pay $25 million to come back to see us in the Senate, I just don't think that would be very wise.
Yeah, I think that's the direction I would like to go. If that's something that you would be supportive of, that would be great. But I do have an amendment that that I would like to offer at the appropriate time.
I can support that, Senator, and I'll sit down to let you offer your amendment.
Thank you. Mr. President?
Senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an amendment. It's short, and I ask that it be read.
Send the amendment forward.
And I move for its adoption.
Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute Amendment Number 1 for Senate Amendment Number 1, offered by Senator Silvey. Amend Senate Substitute Amendment 1 for Senate Amendment 1, Senate Substitute, Senate Committee Substitute, Senate Bill Number 190, page 3, line 6, by striking the word, quote, 12, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof, quote, 25, end quote, and further amend line 7 of said page by striking the word, quote, 3, end quote, and inserting in lieu thereof, quote, 6, end quote.
Senator, would you care to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, I think that the senator from Cape Girardeau is on the right track in providing disincentives for exceeding the cap. I like the idea in the underlying substitute that if they go over 0.75% above the cap that they're excluded from participating in the program. However, in the underlying amendment, there was a financial disincentive of $12 million and $3 million. I think that by bumping that to $25 million, you would completely wipe out any financial gain by exceeding that cap and I think provide a stronger financial disincentive for them to remain under that 3% cap. So it's very simple. I would ask, I renew my motion for the adoption and again ask the body to support the amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator for San Francisco, what purpose do you write?
To inquire the senator from Butler.
Senator from Butler, do you yield for an inquiry from the Senator from St. Francis?
I do. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, how you doing?
It's like Yogi Berra said, deja vu all over again.
I hear you. It's our fourth rendition, our fourth shade of lipstick, right?
Yes.
WHIP, ISRIS, PBR, and now PISA.
Remember the SMR thing?
Yes.
I forgot about that one. Yep. The other day we were discussing.
How did the bill signing go?
Say it again.
How did the bill signing go?
You know, the bill signing went great. Floor leader's friend out there owns a trucking company, and I felt right at home out there. We had the bill signing in his garage, actually. When I walked in, seen all the mechanics and everybody there, and the owners and the workers out there, it was great. The bill signing went great on expert witness.
Well, very good. Well, congratulations on that bill. I know you played a instrumental part in getting that done, and it was worthy for you to be there for that signing, and I'm glad that our colleagues were able to accommodate you by stretching this self-imposed filibuster on this particular bill today.
Yeah, it was great. You know, that expert witness, that's going to do some great stuff. You know, there's been a lot of work done on that in the years. You know, I know that, you know, I handled the House bill this year here, but there's been a lot of work done by our current lieutenant governor and, of course, our floor leader. They blazed a trail on that expert witness, and the representative from over at the House, Representative Corlew, you know, did a good job. But I really think it's going to help everybody on the defense side as well as on the plaintiff side. On when you represent yourself as an expert, you should indeed be able to prove that you are, in fact, an expert when you're doing testimony and not get in front of a jury and prejudice a jury. So it's going to be great. It's going to mean that businesses are now open again for...
Do you feel like the expert witness bill is something that applies equally across the state and benefits all Missourians?
Yes.
Not for a special interest or a special group?
No, like I say, whether it's defense or the plaintiff, when an expert witness presents themselves and want to present evidence, they should indeed, in fact, know what they're talking about and be able to prove it. And I think
that's one of the things that I think is good about the bill. It's a bill that applies fully across the state. It doesn't pick a winner, doesn't pick a loser. It's actually a bill that affects the entire state.
Yeah.
Other than what we're seeing with Senate Bill 190 today.
Well, Senate Bill 190, I think it does pick a winner, and maybe two. Could be another one in there. But, yeah, it's picking winners and losers. And you know really who the losers are.
It's going to be the businesses across the state.
Well, not just businesses, but families across the state that's just trying to buy groceries and send their kids to school, make their house payments, make their car payments. You know, it's just another tax on people.
I like the term tax. Can you define tax? I think you're the one that kind of coined the issue in the beginning, and I figure it's only fair for you to kind of explain that issue.
Well, it's a utility tax. First of all, you don't have a choice. If you want to have electricity, wherever you live, you have to buy it where you're told to buy it, where you have to buy it.
And what's the money used for?
Oh, the money that comes in?
Yes.
Well, it definitely don't go to the good of the people.
It goes to build infrastructure, which is what a road and use tax is about. And
oh, you're talking about highway funding all of a sudden?
Well, just as a parallel or as a comparison, yes.
Well, you know, in highway funding, you know, when we should have already raised the motor fuel user tax, you know, it's worked for 93 years. It's a mystery to me why everybody keeps searching for another plan to fund our highways. I mean, I always like good ideas and stuff, but we've had a plan for 93 years. And the good thing about motor fuel user tax, it actually goes for an investment in highways and bridges that all the citizens of Missouri own. Now, the utility tax is a little different story. You know, it goes to prop up corporate profits and, you know, for some executives and stuff like that. So it really doesn't go out, you know, for the good of the people. So that's why the utility tax is.
Maybe a matter of semantics, but, you know, we were challenged that it's not really a tax. It tried to be use a different term. But when you collect money from your citizens and use it for the function of building infrastructure, that's what we do with our other taxes and use for other services in the process. So that's the parallel we were trying to make in what this bill was doing, was increasing the tax or the cost to the consumer.
That's right.
Or the benefit, as they put it, the modernization of the grid.
Right. Well, you know, when you invest in roads and bridges, that investment there is generally there for 50 to 75 years. Hey, would you do me a favor?
Yes.
Would you raise your microphone up a little bit so I can hear you a bit better?
How's that?
Yeah, I just turned 65 recently.
Congratulations, you did. I seen
I
that.
Did.
And I did not Facebook birthday you, so sorry about that. But
no, it's all right. Had a great birthday. Had my favorite strawberry cake made by some ladies down in Dexter, Missouri.
She does those well?
Say it again?
She does that well?
Oh, my goodness. That's all they do is make cakes.
And strawberries are pretty popular down that
park. Oh, it's not strawberries barbecue.
No,
I had a strawberry cake.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I want to bring you a little bit up to date.
Hey, where am I at? Because I was out there at that bill signing.
You were at the bill signing. Just kind of get started here. You know, the bill was introduced, obviously, as the grid modernization. But under current PSC rules, under current system, there's nothing that prohibits...
Oops, sorry.
There's nothing that prohibits utility companies from now investing more than $700 million
Well, actually,
in the infrastructure.
They're supposed to take care. That's why they're a monopoly. They're supposed to take care of getting electricity out and taking care of the infrastructure.
Three times out of the last 10 years, 3 years out of the last 10, if I remember right, planned service was over $1 billion. Matter of fact, the most recent race case was over $1 billion in planned service. Is that the numbers that you've seen?
Yes.
In the research that we've done. So, in reality, why do we need this bill to do $1 billion worth of infrastructure when it's already been proven it can be done? So that's one of the first conversations we had.
Right.
One of the things that the sponsor stated was that he has a chart of several states that have changed their rate-making process, and Missouri's rates are going up at a considerable pace. And unless we change the rate-making process, we're going to continue to see those rise. But then in his inquiry with the senator from the 13th, and I quote, "The rate case process does not change." Those were his words. So in essence, what Senate Bill 190 does is keep the rate-making process the same, but it piles on by adding PISA, which
right.
removes regulatory lag,
right.
which adds property tax, which adds transmission costs. These are all additional monies and revenues that the utility companies will be able to add on to the bill and still utilize the same current rate-making process.
Right.
So where's the benefit? They can already build $1 billion worth of infrastructure if they want to, but this bill is going to allow them to capture depreciation quicker, raise the rates quicker,
yep.
and be able to add on property tax as well as transmission costs. So where's the benefit to the consumer?
Well, I've not been able to find any, but it's all about diminishing the oversight of PSC, is what all this legislation has been about ever since I've been in this building, is to diminish the oversight. And as you know, the PSC is the only thing that ratepayers have got to look out for their best interest. That's why you get the category of being a monopoly. You agree to be a monopoly, you get a certain return, like 9.5, whatever it is right now. You know, they're looking to move it to 9.9. But I'm here to tell you, Senator, it's not about the grid, it's about the greed. Hear that?
Say that one more time. Well, hold that thought because,
all right, I'm going to say it a few more times.
Three senators standing. Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Hearing no objections, you may proceed, Senator.
Mr. President, sitting on the benches in front of you are four students from St. Angela Merisi. And I would ask that they be made pages for the day. They are members of the 7th grade class. Their names are Jordan Gibson, Lauren Simpkins, Deanna Talavera, and Durand Woods. They are all accompanied by their teacher, Ms. Kramer, and their other and the rest of their class from St. Angela Merisi, who is on your left or your right and my left in the upper gallery, and I ask that the body make them feel welcome.
Would the guest of the Senator from the 13th please rise and be recognized by the Missouri Senate? And your students will be made pages of the day, Senator.
I am pizza and soda, too.
I will not, Senator.
Oh, I think I'll take care of that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senators, you may proceed.
Senator, you had a statement there that was loud and clear. Can you repeat that, please?
I said this legislation and previous legislative endeavors here since I've been in the Senate has not been about the grid. It's been about the greed.
Can you explain that a little bit more? I mean, right now, I guess my frustration is that there has not been a need shown. If there's been a need to increase $200 million a year, they can do that without this legislation.
That's correct.
If there's a critical mass that needs to be taken care of, it's not been shown to the point that the stakeholders, the consumers, whether it's the residential consumer, the retail consumer, or the large industrial consumers, the folks that we met with and had to testify before the interim committee, which I was a member on that committee, and I heard the testimony. Those folks felt confident. I mean, you're talking about a company that's touted reliability, but
right.
now they're claiming they need this bill because they're not reliable. You can't
right.
have it both ways.
Well, you know, Ameren and KCP&L were just ranked number one and number two in the whole Midwest for reliability and service. It's just amazing to me how they, I guess they just keep telling the same thing and they start believing it or something. I don't
know. Say it loud enough, long enough, it's true, right?
I guess that's true. And
Here's the frustrating part. If you go to page 23 that talks about the smart meters, you know what's going to happen to consumers that don't take the smart meter and they want to keep their regular analog meter, whatever they're called?
What's going to happen?
They're going to get to pay an additional surcharge because they're keeping the old meters. Now, is that fair to consumers? Again, this
Not
is
really.
The greed.
I like the way they say, well, the consumer is going to be able to control their electricity better by having a smart meter or something. It's like,
is that like calling creditkarma.com to get your credit score? That's going to
I guess you're going to go out there and look at your smart meter or look at your cell phone or whatever and say, honey, turn the refrigerator back down a little bit. You know, getting it too cold. I guess that's what we're going to manage. I don't know. But they've always got little acronyms and things in the last 5 years. This is our fifth year up here. They've always got these little acronyms that kind of convince people we need to do something, or trying to convince people. But you know what people really want to do? It's just pay their electric bill, pay for their food, send their kids to school. You know,
the lights are going to come on when they flip the switch.
Yeah, they want electric come on, flip a switch, you know. And here we are, just recently, they asked for $204 million. I believe it was $204. And the PSC approved them for right at $93 million. Add about another $4 a month to everybody's electric bill. And this is not just about businesses. You know, we're here also, and I know that you are looking out for the common folks.
Absolutely.
They don't have much of a voice in this building. But when you got over 40 lobbyists working on a bill, that should give you a little bit of a clue that there could be something just a little sidewinder on that bill.
Follow the money.
Huh?
Follow the money.
Follow the money. Yeah, there was a famous radio commentator coined that, and half my brain tied behind my back or something like that. But at any rate, that's where it's all about. Folks just want to be able to get their electricity. They realize and understand from time to time the PSC is going to have to allow, you know, these monopolies to be able to adjust rates or whatever they need to do. But the thing that's always amazed me is they're always trying to get us to do something here in the legislature to force the PSC commissioners over there and how they look at request and their overview and their purview. What in the world would we do if we didn't have the PSC?
They're a critical part of the process, and we've got to make sure they're as fully functioning as possible to be able to do their jobs to protect the customers. When you're talking about a multi-billion dollar company, the amount of money, cash that flows through there, there's three of them.
Yep.
And they coalesce around an issue and really do some influencing on their particular issue that protects them. You know, the only other two groups that I remember testifying in our committee hearing was one of the companies that's going to make the smart meters supporting the bill.
Yeah.
And then Doe Run, who's going to benefit from a special rate.
Boy,
which that's
they,
a story
they,
we'll get to a little bit more later on. I am so disappointed in Doe Run selling out on this particular issue and taking a special rider.
Did they make a quick turnaround or what?
They sure did. When we went through an exercise this summer and they realized what the cost of removing regulatory lag was going to be and how much it was going to cost, they said they could not support it. So the next thing we know, they're getting a special rate. So they will support the bill. They're going to throw the rest of their peers under the bus because they don't have to worry about this bill anymore. They get a special rate. Everybody else is going to pay the rate. And if you want to go even further, let's look on page 44. You know what happens on page 44? Anybody that gets an EDR, the difference between what they would have paid in their rates and the EDR they're getting, all the other consumers get to pick up that cost because the utility company is going to get a stated revenue rate. How it gets divided out is how based upon the formula. So any reduction in the rate to the companies that get that EDR, everybody else gets to pay for it.
Wow.
How is that good for the consumer?
There is nothing good for the consumer in here. There's nothing good for it. You know,
the only thing they can say is it's possibly going to benefit reliability in the future. But when you're already touting 1 and 2 in reliability in the country, what is there to fix? What is there to improve upon at this point?
Well, that's part of their job anyway.
That's part of their job. They're guaranteed monopoly. That's their job. By being a monopoly, they get the benefit of protection.
Well, I've got a really lot of deep stuff here to go into here in a minute, too, but let's just go ahead and talk some more about this. But I was in that committee meeting, and so you're saying the only people who was in support of this bill had financial gain?
That is correct.
Is that right? That's pretty amazing.
You know, I would have liked to have seen maybe some of the larger companies. We won't throw names out there, but some of the larger consumers.
They know who they are, don't they?
They know who they are. Or even some of the mid-sized consumers that would have said, hey, I'm struggling. I've had my lights go off one too many times. I want my area of the grid fixed. Or the residential consumers to say, hey, you know, we really feel like we need something better. But no, we had none of that, no testimony of that. To me, the stakeholders did not buy off on this piece of legislation.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Do you know how much Social Security went up for our fixed income folks this year?
Like $2, wasn't it?
Dollars. And so they're already $2 in the hole.
They just got $4 April 1st.
They just got $4 April 1st, so now our Social Security folks are $2 in the hole right now.
I remember working on highway funding. You remember the highway funding, some of the highway funding bills that I had and the sender?
I do recall that, yes.
Remember the highway funding?
It was a little frustrating.
And we talked about how it was going to cost the citizens of Missouri. It was going to cost them like $8 or $9 a year if we raised their motor fuel user tax by 2 cents a gallon. And that's just for people that actually drive cars. But everybody's got to have electric.
Absolutely.
I guess you don't have to have. I guess you could live down in some of the areas where I live. And I live in a pretty rural area. And my
farm's pretty rural areas.
Actually, Papa Bluff's not real rural, but I'm from a real rural area, and Senator for 13th and I were talking a while ago about how rural it was. She had a brand new Oldsmobile 88 that she borrowed to come down and visit some relatives down in Wayne County one time, and she ended up having to go out through one of her dirt mud roads and messed her car all up. But at any rate, you got to have electricity. You have no choice. Have no choice. But, you know, we were sitting there last year thinking, well, you know, I heard this a lot, you know. Well, it's going to cost everybody more money. You know, and I did all the different numbers on if it's 2 cents or, you know, we started out with the 2 plus 2 plus 2. And you know what's really amazing about that? That was only going to cost the average motorist about $8, $9 a year. We just stuck them with $4 on their electric bill.
A month.
$48
a year.
Just stuck them $4 on their electric bill per month.
Yes.
And you know what they asked for?
They asked for almost nine.
3.5 times that.
Yes.
200 and some million.
That's right.
$200 and some million what they asked for. So, I have confidence. I have never introduced a bill here to stiffen anything over to PSC against utilities. Have you?
No.
Think maybe we ought to?
No?
Okay. I was just curious. But, so I have full confidence that the commissioners at the PSC have got a balancing act to do. They have got to keep the monopoly status companies, which, by the way, for the listeners, have no competition, by the way, zero competition. They have to balance that with them remaining profitable and be able to pay their workers and keep consistent electric service versus against the public good. And there's always legislation here in this building trying to cut back the OPC on their funding. There was some last year again.
You were pointing out, I think, just last night to me that there was language that was going to defund or cut back the funding of the OPC, which is
eliminate from general revenue.
What's that?
To eliminate out of general revenue.
Eliminate it.
Yeah. They had some other. I didn't get a chance to read the rest of it, but that one line at the bottom is going to eliminate the OPC out of general revenue. And what is the main function of the OPC, just for the benefit of the members here that's not been engaged in this as much as you and I have?
Well, the Office of Public Counsel. I mean, they're there to look after the interest of the population.
Of our residential consumers primarily, any consumer actually that feels that's like
right.
they need to file a complaint against the utility company that you and I really couldn't do by ourselves, but if we filed a complaint, a legitimate complaint with the OPC, they could file it on our behalf and challenge the utility companies on whether or not they were doing their jobs properly.
Yeah, but to show you how devious and mischievous these monopoly companies are, they're always trying to figure out a way to even diminish them. All I know is, Senator, you know, everybody thought the only reason why we stood up a lot of times was for a company called Naranda. You remember that company?
I remember.
Yeah. You remember?
I was calling Naranda whore.
Yeah, that's bad, wasn't it? But you know who I was always standing up for? I was standing up for anybody that gets an electric bill. Because when you're a monopoly, you have responsibilities. And it's not trying to figure out how to extract more money from people unnecessarily. When you operate as a monopoly, you have a special designation and you have a responsibility to provide consistent electric service at a reasonable profit margin. That's what it's all about. But you know what? And I told everybody, you know, used to it was Ameren versus Naranda. You remember that?
Yeah,
that all seemed, the news for Ameren versus Naranda.
That seems to be what they wanted to make this out to be. When
never was.
Never
was Ameren versus Naranda with me.
And I don't know why they could never realize that, but I guess that was made better theater to call it that than to actually realize that.
Yeah,
there are
company.
Some senators that think right. for themselves and can study the issue and realize that this is about profits and greed for the utility companies as opposed to providing better service when they already have all the tools they need to provide the best service possible and receive the highest rating possible right. of reliability. We can't say that enough. Well, what's the problem that needs to be fixed here?
Well, you know, electric was a big deal to Naranda. You know, they were the biggest electric users in the state of Missouri, one of the biggest customers of Ameren. It was amazing to me. I never, ever treated my biggest customer like that was going on. You know, our first day in the Senate here in 2013 is when they were trying to put the big 10% surcharge on everybody. Remember that deal?
I do.
Yeah. And then last year, they thought, well, let's just drag their, I called it dragging their dead body around the halls here. You know, when it looked like they were going to be going out of business.
But you know what's frustrating about that?
Try to cut a special deal. Do what?
You know what's frustrating about that?
Tell me.
Is that when Naranda was trying to go through the PSC to get a special economic development rate, who was their biggest detractor on that?
Yeah.
Ameren.
That's right.
But then when it finally got to a rude situation where Naranda was about to go out, they made an agreement.
Yeah.
Ameren said, we'll give you an EDR. We'll put it in our bill. You help us pass the bill.
Yep.
Same thing. We're doing it all over again. The next largest consumer is Doe Run.
Yeah.
So what happened? Doe Run is now their dead sheep they're dragging around office to office saying, hey, we'll put a rider on here for you if you will help us sell this bill.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you. You know, Senator, I am just glad that you have stuck with representing the folks that don't have a voice. And all these other companies, they're small businesses, moms and dads that don't have time to be up here lobbying. They don't have time. They can't afford to be away from their business. Be up here lobbying like these 40-plus lobbyists and paid company people in here trying to sell a bill of goods to good legislators. And they make all their bills so complicated and so convoluted that it's easier to just take somebody's word for something. But I feel so good that you stood tall. You stood tall in that committee meeting. You didn't just point out the fact that you were against Senate Bill 190. You put it out there why you were against Senate Bill 190. And it was nobody challenged you. Nobody.
And it's not like that I just had a couple of evenings dealing with this. I served on that committee and went to those three interim committee hearings.
Yep.
I also spent time this summer with
Hammer and Doe Run discussing what removing regulatory lag would actually cost, because initially I thought, hey, this would be possibly a way to fix some of the issues. But when it was realized how much it was actually going to cost the consumer, it's a great idea, but it's cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
And so we have to make that realization. Regulatory lag's been in existence for over 100 years. It's been there.
Right. For a purpose.
And there's a reason that folks need to realize that even though an item has fully depreciated out tax-wise, but if it's still in use and useful condition and still operating, Utilities companies can still claim depreciation from that item even though it's fully depreciated out, which makes up for some of the regulatory lag. It also makes up for some of the telephone poles or some of the transfer stations that didn't survive a full life, and right. So it's offsetting. But the key factor here is that the PSC is allowed to use all relevant factors when making their decisions on how the rates should be established. And as long as they're allowed to do that, we are going to be protected as consumers that the utility companies are only going to invest in infrastructure that is needed and necessary, and that will maintain a steady level of efficiency of the utilities being offered to this community and to our state.
Right.
Bottom line, we have a system that is working. We're not in a crisis with outdated services. We want to go from analog meters to smart meters. That seems to be the biggest picture being painted right now.
Right.
But let me ask you this. I should have looked this up. It just kind of dawned on me. They were Senator from the 13th and Senator from Barton were discussing jobs.
Yeah. I forgot about the jobs bill a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's supposed to be an economic and jobs bill.
Thousand-man job bill on I-70 corridor.
I haven't connected the dots yet. But the thing about it is if we put the smart meters in, we don't need meter readers. So how many meter readers are going to be displaced from their jobs if we put these smart meters in?
They only talk about their side.
Only talk about that side. Correct.
Hey, you know what? I did a little, I like talking transportation a lot. Because I don't know it. Anybody can probably hear me. If somebody didn't use a road or bridge today, just, somebody text me or something. But, roads and bridges are pretty important. But, I come from the business world, the real business world, and that is where you actually own it.
You have a little competition. You got to make sure you take care of your customers if you want to stay in business.
Yeah, I come from the real business world. I don't mean working for somebody else. I don't mean knowing I had a paycheck coming. I did a little research. There's some people that criticize MoDOT a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, everybody I've met at MoDOT has been good.
Three senators standing. Senator from Barton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please lay that bill on the informal
calendar? That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate go the order of business of reports of standing committee.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of standing committees. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Please send your report forward. Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate substitute for Senate Bill number 293, begs leave to report that it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully submitted, Senator Kehoe, Chairman.
Senator from Newton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Please refer House Concurrent Resolution 6. House Concurrent Resolution 12 to the Rules, Joint Rules, Resolution Ethics.
Those resolutions will be referred to. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. No further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. President. I take that motion back because the good senator from St. Genevieve reminded me. Without objection, the Senate go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Senator from San Francisco, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. With the hour 12 coming upon us, Senate Education will meet at 12:15 in Senate Committee Hearing Room 1.
Announcements. Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Committee on Health and Pensions will meet in a few minutes, 12:15, in Senate Committee Room 2.
Announcements. Hearing none. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, I apologize to my colleagues and appreciate the reminder. Now, Mr. President, no further business coming for the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day.
Senator from Cole moves the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m. this day. All those in favor of that motion say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess till 2 p.m. this day.